projector up, and then we're going to do a 2-minute meditation. We'll know when it turns on. It'll be like a light. We'll do a 2-minute meditation, and then what's your name? Tommy is going to lead us in prayer. All right, meditation. This little reading is called Center. From a bud, only a promise, then a gentle opening, rich, blooming, bursting fragrance, the fulfillment of the center. True beauty comes from within. Take a flower, for example. In the beginning, it is only a bud. It does not yet show its loveliness to the world. It does not attract bees or butterflies, and cannot yet become fruit. Only when it opens is beauty revealed in its center. There is the focus of its exquisiteness. There is the source of its aroma. There is its sweet nectar. In the same way, our own unique beauty comes from within. Our glory has nothing to do with our appearance or our occupation. Our special qualities come from the inner source. You must take care to open and bloom naturally and leisurely and keep to the center. It is from there all mystery and power come, and it is good to let it unfold in its own time. Just as a flower goes through stages, bud, open, bloom, pollinate, wither, fruit, fall, each of us will go through the obvious stages of birth to death. We aren't of a single character throughout our lives. We change and grow. Our identities unfold and bloom. Unless we attain the center and keep to our progressions, we cannot ever reach true independence in our lives. Bill, do you guys like practice prayers here? Because the two guys that have led us in the prayers have been awesome, and I just usually get in a group of people that you ask somebody to say a prayer with this many people, and like it's all jumbled, it doesn't sound right, and everything. But so, you guys, is that?
Well, there's some standard ones we'll offer. I'm just gonna put them on front street. Like, I was kind of in this room while y'all were getting ready to pray for the meal, and AP hit it out of the park, man. And that's just kind of cool. These guys will get opportunities. I think they they do it on their own sometimes in groups, and I guess so. If you have the answer is yes, but there's not like prayer class and, you know, or anything like that.
It's just we got a bunch of awesome dudes in here. That's what it is, isn't it? This place just emits spirituality, doesn't it? Awesomeness. So who wants to be awesome? Sure. Oh, come on, guys. That's like the best you can do. Who wants to be awesome? You know the coolest way to be awesome? The really, really absolute... And I'm going to tell you that I believe this with my whole heart. I'm not just selling you a bag of goods. The coolest way to be awesome is to go out and repair the damage of your past. And I'm going to tell you a couple stories about a couple relationships that are in my life that I'm not kidding you. If you guys would see me interact with these people, you would think that we were like great forever. Tarek's going to probably tell you one or two stories of people that if you saw him interacting with these people, you would think that he was like tight with them and he used to hate these people. So. I think we're fired up, but it's not connecting for some reason.
I don't know.
So, Tarek's going to take you through some of the mechanics of...
That's on some first source. And it's his computer.
The screen looks like it should. This tells me that this is real.
Oh no!
Wait 2 minutes, press.
Okay.
It took a minute for Nick last time.
All right, let me know if it comes up. All right, guys. So we're gonna do.
All right, refocus. Come back.
We're gonna do our best to cover steps 8 and 9 in this session. I think maybe a few times over the course of the weekend I've referenced this immense process as the ultimate surrender. I used to think it was step 9. But recently I've been watching some guys, you know, in my program, it's a 12-step immersion program. So for the first 2 months that I have guys in my program, they can't have a phone or a car until they get on step 9. And so the way they get their phones back and their cars back and are able to get a job is when they've completed their 8-step list. But then for every 10 guys that gets to that place, one or two of them will actually go after the 9th step. The others make their list and they make very few amends. And it's like pulling teeth to get, you know, you check in with them every week and you're pushing them and you're trying to encourage them and show them how important it is and why they need to do it, but they're just the needed power is not there. And I'm starting to see that it's the 8th step. Because the 8th step is pretty specific, and the word willingness happens to be in the 8th step. Made a list of all people we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all.
Does anybody know what the word all means? Yeah, all.
A-L-L. And so over the years, I've also trained myself to sit down with individuals coming back from a relapse, and one of the first questions I ask them is, how many amends were on your first 8-step list? How many were unfinished? That's the first place I'm going to start, because as soon as they tell me they didn't make any of their amends, I've just now shown them there's 2 steps out of the 12 that were not done. You know, guys, in a 12-step program, you got to work all 12 steps. You can't work like 8 steps and expect to get the results of working all 12 steps, but that's what happens all the time. And the baffling part of it is there are people that are 100% convinced and will pass a lie detector test and tell you they were in the program. And then you start asking them a series of questions. Well, okay, so you didn't make all the amends. You had 70 amends to make off your first 8-step list. You only made 40, so there's 30 not done. So step 8, step 9 not done. Let's talk about this 10th step. Well, we determined the 10th step was non-existent. Let's talk about prayer and meditation. Well, I never really learned how to meditate, but I was praying. I hit my knees every morning. How long were you on your knees in the morning? I don't know, 2-3 minutes. Okay, is this the most important relationship in your life? Of course it is. 2-3 minutes? I don't think so. Okay, so now there's 4 out of 11 steps. We're not even to the 12th step yet. That's 4 out of 11 steps that have not been worked. And then you get to the 12th step. Oh, yeah, I did have a sponsor. Well, when was the last time you sat down with him and actually took him through the book? Well, I mean, his schedule is really busy, and he just hasn't had time to meet with me, and he keeps on breaking. So you're not sponsoring anyone. All right. So do you want to change the statement you made where you were in the program? You guys see what I'm talking about here? This happens more often than not. Is people or individuals are convinced they're in the program, but they were not. Because the program, it says here is the program that suggested, or here are the steps which are suggested as your program of recovery. The 12 steps of the program, the meetings, have nothing to do with the actual program. That's a separate fellowship. And that's, you know, in the old school days, you had a program supported by a fellowship. Now, I hate to say it, we have a fellowship with an optional program. Well, I don't know why it's transpired like that, but it has. So the 8th step carries a little bit more weight. It always seemed to be that one step that you're just like, you know, he wanted to get to 12, so he threw the 8th step in there or something. But that's not what it is here. It's an extremely important step, not to mention that our fellowship was founded on that step. And so about 9.5 years ago, I was introduced to a way of doing the 8th step with note cards. And so when you guys get your 8th step list, one of the things I would recommend that you make the list of people and institutions, and then you put each person and institution on a note card. Now, if this projector was working, I'd have it up here, but it's just a 3x5 note card. And you put Joe's name, Joe Smith, at the top. I stole money. I assassinated his character. I tried to steal his girlfriend. And so what I would write on there is I'd put a dollar mark for money. I'd put, assassinate character. And I would put girlfriend. All I need to do is be reminded of the harm. I don't need to write a full-on description of the harm on the card. That's probably in my memory banks. So I just put words that remind me of the harm. And at the bottom, I'm going to put some reminders, because I think in the 8th step, we need as much reflection as possible. And so at the bottom, I need to be very mindful of the questions I need to ask. And the questions are, did I leave anything out? Do you want to talk about how any of this has made you feel? And what do I have to do to make things right between us? So I put the word else question mark. I put feel question mark. And then I put the word right question mark. And I have my note card. And I do that for every person and institution. So I've got a way to track it. Now in the top right hand corner of each note card, I'm going to put a plus and minus system. So let's assume I have a bunch of people that I am willing to make the amends, and I know how to get in touch with them. And so that card gets labeled plus plus. So I go through all the cards and I get my plus plus pile. Let's say I got a bunch of people on here that I'm willing to make the amends, but I don't know how to find them. I either don't have a last name, or they're not on social media, or it's been 20 years, so I don't even know where to begin. So I would put plus minus. Then I've got this stack of people that I am not willing to make the amends, but I do know where to find them. So that gets minus plus. And then I've got the last one, which is I'm not willing and I have no idea. So minus minus. So when a guy's working with me, the only stack we're going to work on for the foreseeable future is plus plus, because those are going to be much easier than the rest of them. You're willing to make these and you know how to get a hold of them. Let's get started. All right? And I'm going to direct him to make some eat. So I had a guy that went and told his girlfriend that he was making amends to her first because it was an easy amends. Completely misunderstood what we mean by when we say go do some easy amends. Not that that you didn't hurt the people. If I'm going to go make amends to my mom and dad, right? I probably hurt them emotionally more than most people. But they were still an easy amends. What do I mean by that? A, they were going to meet with me. B, they were going to listen. C, they weren't going to spit in my face. And three, four, they weren't going to kick me out on my ass and slam the door and say, never come back. But there are people that you make amends to that may do those four things. So we don't start with those at the very beginning. We start with some ones that are simpler. Maybe easy is the wrong word, but this guy that Brandon and I know, it's actually one of Brandon's sponsees. This guy decided to tell his girlfriend that, oh, I'm doing you first because this is an easy amends. Well, she did not take that the way you would think. She thought it was disrespectful, that he was just, you know, sort of sliding under the rug. The harms he had caused her, they weren't that big a deal. But he had emotionally harmed her. He'd emotionally harmed her severely. And maybe it was our fault for not explaining it clearly enough, but that's not our intention. You don't go tell someone, hey, this is an easy amends, that's why you're one of my first 10. But we do want the first 10 to be amends that you feel comfortable with, that you think you get a good idea, these are going to go okay. We're going to have a good conversation. They're going to tell me what I got to do to make it right.
So let's change the language to more comfortable.
More comfortable. Okay.
Not easier. This is going to be one of the less uncomfortable amends.
Better received
amends. Thank you.
Yes. And that's where we want to start so we can get... Yes.
I may have heard this wrong, but did you say you have amends to make that you know where they are, but you're unwilling?
Yes.
Okay, that confused me.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll cover... I mean, I guess we'll cover it now.
Well, no. I walked in on my girlfriend cheating on me with a guy. And so I was unwilling to make that amends for the first, I don't know, 3.5 years of my sobriety. But I knew where he was. I knew how to find him. Because the day came where the willingness showed up, and I knew exactly where to go. And I found him, and I made the amends. I'm going to talk about that.
Yeah, if we get twisted around the ones that we're not currently willing to make, we're not going to do any of them. And I'll use the ones that I'm unwilling to make right now as an excuse for doing none. Let's do all the ones that we know where they are and we're willing. We gain some momentum from those. And then all of a sudden those ones that used to look kind of unattractive, I got some spiritual fortitude now. I can go and do those. Another question?
Yeah. You said that you walked in on your girl with another guy and you had to make an amends to him.
Oh, because I did some shit to him.
Oh.
All right. Hypothetically, let's say the same thing were to happen to you. Would you just go, oh, God, he's just sick, and then leave? Or would you probably maybe respond not in a positive way?
Well, yeah. It's just that's all he said to begin with.
So right. And that's one of the ones he'll probably talk more about.
Every workshop I do, I tell the story around that amends. I'll get to it.
We're trying to get the mechanics out of the way so we can get to the things that we think are fun, which is telling about them.
So the 8 steps important. You got to get your amends list together. I had a guy come to me last week. This is I'm telling you guys because y'all are fairly new to this process. He comes to me last week and he's talking about this amends that is with a girl that he slept with that was married but separated, and I think some kids were involved. So all kinds of it's already a gray area amends, right? And he's completely focused on it. And I said, okay, time out. How many other amends are there that are not this muddy? Well, he's like, oh, we got a bunch. I was like, can we just set this one aside for a year, maybe? And can we just go make all these other amends and see what happens? But I guarantee there are people that have this handful of amends that consume all of your thinking, and you're frightened as hell to make the amends, and so you become paralyzed, and you don't make any amends. Okay, that's why we have the minus-minus stack. I'm not willing, I don't know where they are, or the minus-plus, I'm willing and I know. Just put the card in there.
The reality is you already think that way anyways. You're just putting it out on paper so that you're more aware of it. Because you're already going to push that amend to the back. Now you have a system to allow you to push it to the back.
Which everybody should like. Because there is a part of your mind that says, well, maybe I don't ever have to do this one. Which I promise you, if you get active in the amends process, what's going to happen is the ones you are unwilling to make, based on the experience of making the ones you are willing to make, you become willing to make it. That's how the process works. You're not going to find out what I'm talking about truly until you make some amends. So, your sponsors up to the eighth step have held your hand. Bill and staff here and the guys that are further along that sponsor the new guys, they literally hold your hands all the way through the first eight steps. And then they let go. Because it is your responsibility to make the approaches. It's your responsibility to set up the appointments. It's your responsibility to get clear on the harms. And your sponsors will help you with that. But it's your responsibility to drive to the location where you're going to make the amends. So how do you, what role do you think this step plays in building faith and trust in this process in God? This is it. This is why this is the ultimate surrender. You want to find out how big your God is, make these damn amends. You know why we go to very few meetings where the discussion topic is amends? Because very few people make their amends. The majority of people that I've run across in throughout the fellowships, I was at lunch this week with one of them. You know, guy's been sober about 15 months. We were talking about step work. This guy got sober at 40 years old. And when we were sitting at lunch talking about some amends, the only ones he mentioned were to the wife and the kids and the parents. So, I mean, folks, let's think about this for a second. Let's say you started running and gunning when you're 18. And you get clean and sober at 40. I will give my right arm that you harm people outside of your family. Right? And I could tell by my conversation with him that I was looking at one of those cases where most likely this guy has only made like the immediate circle, you know, maybe close friends and family, and that's it. But because I didn't go there. For whatever reason, my intuition said exercise a high degree of care here. You don't want to, you know, just burst his bubble. This is the first time you've ever had lunch with this guy. You don't know him. So I listened to my intuition. I didn't really bring it up after that. I'm bringing it up here. But I've had this experience enough times in when I do admissions at my program, and guys have had experience with the steps, and I start talking to them about the amends, that's a story I get. When guys talk about making amends, it's only with the family and maybe a few outside, but close friends. What do you think those terrify us as much as the guy that we ripped off 10 years ago and stole all his baseball cards so we could pawn them? Used to be our boy, but we hadn't seen him in 10 years. That one's going to be a little bit more frightening than going to my best friend who I disappeared on. We were hanging out at the tail end, and I got really bad, and I just disappeared, and I need to go tell him I need to make amends to you because I just dipped out on our friendship. Yeah, I mean, you guys are real tight, so there's some emotion. He wants to see you do well. But what about homie 10 years ago? Stole his Cal Ripken and his Kirby Puckett, and you pawned it. So, that was an amends I had to make, stealing baseball cards. Yeah, and I hadn't seen that guy in 20 years. Yeah. The ass kicker of it is he didn't even know I stole. Yeah. So, So, the eighth step, it's pretty cut and dry. It's only really one paragraph in the book. We've come up with this system. I did want to, let's see here. Many addicts and alcoholics look at the ninth step and immediately balk. You must understand the needed power to make amends will not show up until you complete the first eight steps. Using the note card system for step eight simplifies this task. We guarantee, Brandon and I, that from our own personal experience, your perception about making amends will begin to change if you start to take the actions. Not to mention, the amends are crucial in the character defects going into remission. Something happens to us when we sit across the table from another human being and we see the pain in their eyes caused by our selfishness and our self-centeredness, not the drugs and the alcohol. Remember in the fifth step in the big book, is it the fifth step with the tornado? Where the guy comes out of the tornado cellar and he says, hey, ain't nothing wrong up here, Ma, ain't it grand the wind stop blowing? It says in the book that selfish and inconsiderate habits kept the home in turmoil. It said nothing about alcohol. I've always found that interesting. So that the miracle of steps 6 and 7 happens in the actions of steps 8 and 9. It's all connected, folks. So, who in here has been to treatment and attempted to work this 12 steps more than one time? Of all of you with your hands up, how many of you made all your amends? Okay. Let's start there.
So, reconstruction of the ego is fascinating. And I'll show you the... I will tell a story that will explain the resistance some people have to the amends process. Drinking buddy. Shit gets real for a little while. He comes to some meetings and figures that it was just work and kind of stress in his life. So he... see him at a Christmas party, he's loving on me, telling me how awesome the program fellowship is, but you know, I was just dealing with some stuff at work at the time and some stuff in the marriage, all that's fixed. We're good. Don't need that anymore. Love you guys, love what you do. So that was just before Christmas. Super Bowl Sunday the following year, he gets a restraining order slapped on him against it from his wife because he there was an incident where she fell down the stairs. Misunderstanding, of course. So he goes by, gets sober, finds some woman that he gets into a relationship with. She becomes his higher power. And literally becomes his higher power. She's got one of those crazy ex-boyfriends that says that if I can't have her, nobody can. Kills her, kills himself, and leaves my buddy with no God anymore. Literally with no God. So he's completely lost, goes to a hotel room, slits his throat and his wrist, and bleeds out for 16 hours and does not die. Okay? Calls me, he's in treatment. Don't want to be there anymore. Don't want to be there again. This is a Friday evening. He's like, will you come meet with me? I'm willing to do anything. Okay? Clear my schedule. Go meet him on Saturday. We go to lunch. I sit down, start taking him through. I show him the short form of the steps. We get to steps 8 and 9. Talk about how he's going to make amends to everybody that he's wronged. And he says, hold on. I am not going to make amends to her. That bitch for all the stuff that she did for me. No, I'm not doing it. So... the night before, willing to do anything, was willing to kill himself over the loss of this other relationship, but to make amends to his ex-wife that slapped a restraining order and kicked him out of the house for an incident with the stairs? Unwilling? I wish that I could tell you that he changed his mind and everything turned out rosy for him, but... he eventually parked his car in some lady's living room. He's been to jail 2 or 3 times since. I don't know if he's sober right now or not. Okay? That's how powerful people's fear of making amends can be. Death, making amends. Not making amends. Death seemed like a viable option for him. Fascinating. Fascinating to watch.
The chapter into action, closing it out, you know, on page 76, they talk about step 8, and then they start giving us examples of the amends, but they tell us what our real purpose is on page 77. It says our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Have you guys ever noticed how when the 12 steps are portrayed on television or in the movies, it's never in a good light? What is it, a pot of coffee, some slogans, and group therapy, right? The majority
of people sitting around. I'm always going to be sick.
And I'm convinced that the ninth step is our connection, really, other than public information for each fellowship. Isn't the ninth step sort of how we connect our secret society to the outside world? You know? I mean, granted, there's H and I get that. But I'm talking about to the average Joe, right? You know, a lot of people that I've made amends to over the years have no knowledge of what the 12 steps are about. All they know is that we go to meetings. That's typically all they know. So I've had the opportunity to describe what the 12-step process is about. But I wonder how we would be portrayed if more people made their amends. No?
Fair question. If paying your debt to society, would that be considered as making an amends?
You got to tell me.
Incarcerated for something that you...
No. Did? Direct amends. Right? Does you going to jail pay back the money you stole? Does it?
No.
Okay. You still owe the money. Here's the whammy of it, right? You steal $10,000 along with a buddy. How much do you owe? $10,000. You have to pay his part. You have to make people whole. That's what amends means. We amend. Make whole. This is not an apology. This is not I'm sorry. Everybody else knows we're sorry. This is I'm making you whole. I took something from you or the universe and I'm putting it back. Making whole.
Just get some stories. Okay. Yeah, so they're going to tell you how to make amends to enemies. They're going to tell you how to make amends when there's someone else involved and you may implicate them. They're going to tell you, they're going to talk to you about divorce and alimony, criminal offenses, debt, and they're going to talk to you about people you cannot see. That's all outlined in this chapter, and they give you some rules to follow, like the rules to be hard on yourself and considerate of others, use some tact and common sense, take the bit in the teeth. And the horse takes the bit when the owner of the horse wants him to go in a direction that the horse doesn't want to go to. And that's what happens to us. No one shows up to make amends in a fucking good mood, right?
Hey, I'm here to make amends to you.
Yeah. And you know, it's just part of what we have to do. So when I got to my ninth step, it wasn't like, yes, hooray, I'm on the ninth step, let's do this. It was an earnestness that was sort of inside, and it was propelling me. But I mean, there was some confliction about this, and I get the confliction, and I get the uneasiness, and I get the anxiety. But like Brandon said, death make my amends. So, what I want to do now is talk about page 83 as we go into some stories. At the top of page 83. It says that, yes, there is a long period of reconstruction. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fit the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past, as we now see it, being careful not to criticize. So there's another rule. There are defects may be clearing, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. Now look, folks, I made my family amends right off the rip. And they were emotional, And I had to come cleaning a lot of stuff. But, I mean, they weren't frightening. They just were not frightening. And I devastated my family. But I had an A-step list. There was a gentleman in here who saw my A-step list. Who is it? We went to the trunk of my car. There you are, my man. I had my first A-step list out in the car. And so when I first got clean and sober, it had the list of now, the list of later, the list of maybe, and the list of never. And as I stayed clean and sober, I'd be sitting in the meeting, and I'd hear Bill Brown share about an amends, and my head would drop, and I'd be like, damn it, I got to put that on my list too. And this happened a lot. As you can, if you see my list, you'll see there was like at least 60 or 70 that was handwritten when the first list was typed. So, by the end of it, 230 people in institutions, folks. It took me 8.5 years. 8.5 years to approach, not to complete. I've approached everyone that I am consciously aware of that I owe a direct amends to that would not create more harm. Now, of those 230, I'm willing to bet somewhere between 40 and 60 did not respond or did not want to see me. My favorite response was when I reached out to someone from high school and college wanting to make an amends, and I would tell them why I was contacting them, and they would sort of be like, dude, get on with your life. Why do you still think about this stuff? That was my favorite. And so I've paid back. I just made an amends, financial amends last month, $20,000 over my almost 11 years. I've still got more money to pay back. And I just went through the steps, and I had 9 amends to make. 7 of them were with, when my marriage fell apart last year, I'll be honest with you, I became a train wreck in the female department. I just did. That was my experience last year. And so I had to go make amends to 7 women. I sat down. One of them didn't want to see me, and 6 of them did. And they, one of those 6, I mean, it went well. The amends was done, but I mean, you want to talk about humility? It ain't something you practice. It gets delivered to you. Yeah. All right, you are delivered humility, and that's what happened to me last Wednesday. But needless to say, the amends is done. You know, I. And she was, everything she said was true, you know? I experienced myself in that relationship in a way I hope I never experience myself again, in terms of just disrespecting. You get involved with somebody, and instead of being a man and telling them, you know, I'm not interested, I'm gonna move on, we live too far apart, blah, 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 what did I do? I just stopped communicating. That's a very painful thing to do to a partner sometimes. And that's what I had done. And then I attempted some half-ass amends early on after that relationship ended. Brandon told me to cease and desist at that point, and I did. And then I went through the steps, and I said, you know what, I got to do this one again. And that's what happened. But I made my amends. The only amends I have left is with my stepdaughter, and I wrote her a letter. I gave it to my ex-wife. She read it. She said, I'll give her the letter. It's up to her if she wants to see you. All right? And that's where I'm at right now. Otherwise, all those, so there's not a street on this planet where I can walk, or I'm going to be walking down the street, I'm going to see somebody that's going to either cause me to cross the street, or is going to cause me to duck into a store, or change my behavior. Even if I run into the girl from last week, because I've looked her in the eye, and I've done what I can to make things right, you know. The amends ended was like, hey, we'll be fine if I run into you. I'll be cordial and stuff, but I really don't care if I ever see you again. I get it, all right? The amends was made. We write such matters to our utmost. That's what we do here. So, why don't you tell a couple stories? I'll wrap up.
So, the woman that kicked me out on the island with no bridge, that wanted, it was, I, she could not have a conversation with me for probably a year and a half without telling me all the things that were wrong with me. Okay, she was very displeased with me, very displeased that I left her with 2 children to raise on her own, very displeased that I had failed to uphold the commitment that I made to her when we got married. very upset about the financial difficulty that I put her through. All these things, right? I'm convinced, and this is about the strongest way I can say it to give anybody any concept of how she felt about me. Aside from needing support with the children and child support in the form of money, I bet you she would have just rather I'd been dead. That's how she felt about me. About, I think it was about a year and a half, finally got around to the point where I felt like the relationship was not as toxic and we could sit down and I could make amends to her. And I did. And it didn't go as I thought. I thought she was going to tell me all this, just completely rip me a new one, and all how I was towards her and all this stuff. And it was very emotional. There were a lot of tears on her end. And when she told me how it made her feel. I asked her if I had left anything out. And there was like, that was the question I dreaded, because I was certain that she was going to come out with this list of all the other things that I had left out. And then what was fascinating is when I said, how can I make it right with you? Again, in my mind, I figured she was going to want like double the child support and all this stuff. And you know what she said? Stay sober for your kids. That's all she asked. That's all she wanted out of me. Now, the cool thing is that if you stay this course and you continue to live this way of life, how can I make it right has been very open-ended and has gone on even till this day. She got into a relationship with another guy. They were engaged. He also was an alcoholic and was starting to act a little kooky. He had moved out and he was threatening to come back in and take some things from the house. She was very terrified of this. She called me very frightened one night, asked me if I would come and change the locks. So I went to her house, left dinner with my current family, went to her house, changed the locks for her because she trusted me and felt safe asking me to do that. They had also bought some furniture. He was like just harassing her about this dresser that he wanted her to pay for. He said it was worth $850. She said it was worth $400. I said, pay him the $850. She's like, I don't have the money. I said, I'm sending you the money right now. She's like, I'm not going to take that from you. I'm like, that's fine. If you want to pay me back, do it through like reduction of the reimbursables. But you need to get him out of your life, and the only way you're going to do that is to pay him the money. So I sent her extra money to pay off the former fiancé to get him out of her life. Our kids are very active. They have multiple things. She constantly is leaning on me for support and help and driving and things like that, and I help out whenever I can. The universe has done this really cool thing, is it's put me in a relationship with another woman who has two kids that has another dad from, you know, that she was married to. And this guy's an ass. He's a complete turd. He makes shit tons of money and like gripes over a $15 prescription bill, right? And I know that everything that he gives her is not enough, because I'm having to supplement his kids with my income. And so I know what it's like to be married to a woman that's trying to raise two kids with a deadbeat dad. So the universe has provided me with this place where I don't want to be deadbeat dad. I want to be the furthest thing from deadbeat dad. I pay in advance. She tells me she's having a big month of extracurricular expenses. I go ahead and send her extra $500. When people hear or see me interact with this woman, they assume we're married. She wanted me dead. my parents, who I stole, my dad invested in a business, and I basically just pissed away a bunch of the money that he gave me. Like six figures worth, right? Then, after I filed bankruptcy and said, screw you, creditors, I'm not paying anybody back, he gives me a credit card in his name so that I can continue to have a regular job. Ran up another $40,000 worth of debt and didn't pay it back. Right? This is how I treated this man. Now, we've reconciled that entire debt. And when they make financial decisions now, I have an older brother and a younger sister. They consult with me because they feel like they're getting honest and straightforward advice. They loaned me money again. Why? They did. They loaned me money again, and you know what? I paid it back, and it was five figures, and I paid it back sooner than I said I would. And he said, you know, you still got some time to pay it back. I said, I want to be clean with you. This is how that relationship's changed. I'm the one that, in the end, gets to make all the decisions for their well-being because they see me as level-headed and responsible. That was not who I was, guys. This is where you get a take on... So I'm real clear. I did not make the amends to these people. The mother of my children, you will never hear me call her anything other than her name or the mother of my children. I feel that the term ex-wife carries an extremely negative connotation. I will not use it. Because I married that woman, I loved her, I wasn't done loving her. I don't want to be married to her now. I want to be married to the woman I'm married to. But I choose my words because words mean something to me. She's the mother of my children. That's very important to me. That's what I call her. Okay? So when I made amends to all these people, it was not to get something. Have I gotten something out of it? You betcha. More than I could possibly ever imagine. I have employers that I've made amends to. That I hated these people and now I like these people. I have employers that I've attempted to make amends to that they don't want to hear from me. I don't know why. I don't think I cost them anything, but maybe I did.
Okay. I don't have enough time to share all the stories I typically share at this point in the workshop. But I'm going to share a few. And I already gave you a sneak peek. So I did. In 2000, so I was, 23 years old. I had this inkling that my girlfriend at the time was cheating on me, so I stalked her one night, followed her around everywhere. I had a feeling it was the bartender at her work. So she goes to his apartment, parks her car. I park across the street. I stay out there all night long. And then at 7 in the morning, I see her come out of his apartment, and I'd left a rose on her car. And I went and parked across the street, and she freaked when she saw the rose and, like, stormed back into the apartment. And I waited a while, and then I went back in there. And, of course, I found what I found, and I got real violent and pushed her and pushed him and said a bunch of stuff. And I proceeded to assassinate his character. I wanted all my friends to cut him off. I made his life a living hell the best I could for the foreseeable future. And so when I got clean and sober, I made that list, and he was on my never list. And this was sometime in late 2010 or early 2011. I'm thinking now it was warmer, so it must have been around the March or April 2011. At this point, I'm about 3.5 years sober. I'm driving down the road, and I know the bar. And I had not been willing to make this amends. And for whatever reason, that day, what comes into my consciousness is it's time to make amends to this guy. And I said, no way, I'm not doing it. And I'm driving down the road, and I know about a mile down on the left is going to be the bar. And I'm just like, I'm just having that dialogue. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. And then I remember, you know what? It's the middle of the day, and he's probably not working. He's the main bartender. At least I can tell my sponsor I tried to make the amends. So I pull into this bar. It's the middle of the day. It's like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I walk in, and he is standing behind the bar. And I'm just like, holy, okay. So I walked up to him. I said, hey, what's up, Tony? Can I get 5 minutes of your time? This is not one that I scheduled. This is just one of those, and I recommend you schedule. The people know what's about to happen. This just happened this way. And so we sit down at this booth, and I begin to make amends to him. I tell him the harm I'm clear on, like how I treated him afterwards, what I said to him, and the way I pushed him, and you know everything I did to her that involved him after that, and assassinating his character, trying to get all his weed connections cut off. And he started crying, man. It was real, real emotional for him. And it was emotional for me. And, you know, he begged pretty much for my forgiveness of him. Now, typically that's the only time that's ever happened. What we bonded, and I made the amends. But this is the part of the story I really want to say. So my dad and I, every Sunday, we got lunch and we went and saw a movie. And sometimes most of the time we went to Longhorn Steakhouse, but every once in a while we'd go into this bar. Maybe once every 2 months we go to this bar. And Tony's behind the bar. He would always wait on my dad and I. And he'd come over and he would shoot the breeze with my dad and I. 2 years ago, I'm in the restaurant with one of my grand sponsees. And Tony greets us at the door. Tony and I embrace. He comes to our table. We catch up. And, you know, it's like we're too long. We've been friends since we were kids. So he goes off and he's working at the bar. My grand sponsee, I tell him the story and he didn't believe it. He said, there's no way in hell you caught that guy cheating with your ex-girlfriend. You guys act like you've known each other your entire lives. How is that possible? I turned to him. I said, that is the power of making amends. That is the power. That is unexplainable. In the outside world, that does not happen. Those relationships do not get restored. The last one I want to talk about briefly is I slept with my best friend's fiance. My boy. I'm talking, we traveled across this country, living out of hotel rooms, seeing panic. This was my best friend. And it devastated a whole group of friends because some people find out she was cheating on him with me and they insisted that we tell him or they were going to tell him. So it started to put them in an awkward position because they were hanging out with him knowing his girlfriend was sleeping with me. And so the whole group of friends, I mean, there's a lot of people involved in this, probably 20, all were affected by it. And then, of course, it all came out and it all went to hell. And I had to make amends to everyone that was involved in that circle. And I went to make amends to him, and we did it at a restaurant. And, I mean, it was one of those humility being delivered to you events because I sat there and took it, and it was like a bazooka coming at me, right? And he cried, and I remember him getting up from the table and, like, pacing around and sitting back down. And, I mean, it was tough. But we began to rebuild our friendship. In September of 2010, I went to a workshop at a monastery. The guy putting the workshop on sent an email to everyone attending and said, please bring something that you value greatly, a personal artifact. That best friend who I slept with his fiance, after we rebuilt our relationship, he gave me a gift, and it's in my car, a pendant of this mineral rock that was wrapped so you could wear it around a necklace. He gave that to me. In the first night at the retreat, we all had to stand up in front of the audience and tell the story behind our artifact. And I got to tell that story. In the outside world, you sleep with your boy's girlfriend. Most of the time, that relationship is never restored. That's the power of making amends. two, there was a couple that was affected by this. The girl, the fiance, was house sit for them. And so we used to use their apartment to meet and have sex. And apparently one time we met and we had left a used condom in the apartment. Well, I take this couple out to dinner one night to make the amends. I'm there to make amends for putting them in the situation because they were very close to both of them. And they knew about it and it affected everybody. And somehow in the conversation, I can't remember if I was actually making amends for using their apartment the way I did, but it came out that she and I used to meet at their apartment when they're out of town. Right? And they finally knew where the used condom had come from. I'm telling you, folks, I made this amends in 2008. This happened in 2003. So this couple, for 5 years, thought the other one had cheated. They didn't know where the condom had come from. Both of them were like, I don't know where that's from. And the other one would say, I don't know where that's from. And until I became willing to make that amends and show up that night, they finally knew where the condom had come from. So what if I had not become willing to make that amend? We never know the ripple effect of our actions. Now, I never knew about that. And I can go on and on. I can spend literally an entire day up here talking about making amends. Because I've set out, and I don't know why I was blessed with this willingness to make these relationships whole again. And I would like to think that's what I transmit to my sponsees. There's a spiritual law. You can only transmit what you have. If you don't make all your amends, chances are your sponsees won't make all your amends. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. I don't know.
There's in Emmett Fox's Sermon on the Mount, when he's dissecting the Lord's Prayer, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And he's talking about, and he talks about how if you're not getting something in your life that you're praying for, search your consciousness and find if there's maybe somebody that you haven't forgiven in your life. If the things that you're asking the universe for through prayer are not coming to you, perhaps there's some messiness around that area in your life. You want to have better relationships with females? Go clean up the relationships from the past with females. You want to gain some better employment? Go clean up the stuff with your employers. Having trouble making money? Start paying back the money. See what happens. The universe has got this whole thing all connected, guys. For years, I struggled at making money until I started paying the money back, and then the money just comes. It just flows in. Extra money shows up at weird times. I don't know why. Really, I do know why. I could not marry the woman that I'm married to today until I cleaned up my relationship with my former wife. I couldn't. The universe neatly pushed me into a corner where I had to do that. The universe will do all sorts of things. If you're paying attention, you'll feel the vice get tighter and tighter and tighter. If there's that one amend you refuse to make, watch where your relapses show up. I bet you've been thinking about it. The resistance that you create in your life creates the chaos that you live in. Become willing to do these things. You want to get yours, make sure everybody has theirs first. The amends are the process that allows us to do that. There, want to just close with the reading of.
Let's start the next session.
With this? Okay. So we're going to start the next session with what I was going to read, but now we're going to take a break and come back at
7:35.
7:35.